Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
Hey, this is Rachel Wharton. I am the deputy editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan, and this is Brooklyn Eats on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. And as Steve Jenkins said, today we're going to find happiness through serious beer. Our subject today is beer history. My guest is Chris O'Leary, who writes the fine blog named BrewNewYorkNewYork.com, which is an awesome name. And we're going to tell you a little bit about totally amazing beer history of this fine city, both two boroughs, Manhattan and Brooklyn. And we're going to do three segments, which is rare on Brooklyn Eats. We're going to do pre-prohibition, post-prohibition, and modern times. All right, Chris, say hello.
Hi.
So where do we begin?
I guess we can begin prior to the first wave of German immigrants into Brooklyn. Which was, it started to happen around the 1840s. Prior to that era, most people in New York, we're only familiar with ales. So it was more British style, British influenced beers. They were also, I would say, slightly easier to make because they had yeast that were at a room temperature, a warmer temperature, so they didn't require refrigeration or cooling at all. And they were also served, warm too.
At that time, were those being made here?
Some of those were being made here. Yeah, I mean, most of them were, but it wasn't the huge industry that it came to be. There were a lot more teetotalers in New York around that time, prior to the German the influx of German immigrants. So prior to that, it was basically warm, fuzzy, but very flavorful, rich, heavier beer. German immigrants came here and wanted a taste of home.
Crisp, is that the word that we're thinking?
Crisp is a good word to use. Germans generally brewed lagers. Those are bottom fermenting beers, so they require colder temperatures. They were cellared a lot and things like that. They were crisper, I wouldn't say less flavorful, but fizzy yellow beer, I guess, would be a good way to describe it, versus flat brownish beer. That was what came to be in around the 1840s.
I think when you're talking about a period of New York history where unless you are a beer geek, a lot of people don't realize that at one point, I think Brooklyn in particular was producing more beer than any other part of the country.
Mm-hmm. And there were at the height 48 breweries in Brooklyn.
And that was in the late 1890s?
Yep, that was in 1898, I believe.
And they were all German owned? Or German run, German immigrant
most
run.
Most of them were German run. I mean, the larger ones were German run. And, I would say probably 3/4 to even 9/10 of all the beer that was produced in Brooklyn was lager beer
time. Where was it consumed? I mean, was this shipped around the country, or was this all for us?
Most of it was, you have to realize at the time it was a lot more difficult to ship beer you know, halfway across the country. You know, we just didn't have the technology we do in terms of refrigeration and things like that. That's why in the 1870s and up until the 1890s, there were, you know, over 3,000, almost 4,000 breweries in the entire country, because everyone had their local brewery that was producing beer that, you know, they had to consume before it went bad. So, you know, that was the whole reason for... I want to say that was the whole reason for it, but that was one of the main reasons why there were so many breweries in Brooklyn. There was a high demand for beer here, and
because there were so many Germans,
yeah,
and beer drinkers,
yeah.
So what did it look like then? Where were all these breweries? Where were they mainly located?
Well, the most popular little anecdote about Brooklyn's beer history is Brewer's Row,
right?
Which is the
like
area.
A couple of blocks away from us here at Roberta's, I think.
That's right. Yeah. You know, it was a 12 block area with 11 breweries, and you know, it was a lot of very large brick buildings. But the other thing that is still standing in some places are the mansions of the brewers and the owners, who, you know, made lots of money and were able to build very stately.
There was just one that was landmarked recently, right?
Yeah. I honestly am blanking on the name right now.
William Ulmer.
That's
is that
the
right?
One. Yes.
Okay, I looked this up. But so,
although that was the brewery itself, that wasn't the mansion. But there was actually still standing is the brewery and then the house right behind it where the.
So none of the actual breweries themselves are left.
Not many are. I mean, some of the buildings are still standing, but for the most part, you know, they're not. And one of the ones that vanished completely and you wouldn't even know existed is one of the, you know, longest and best-selling brands to ever be brewed in Brooklyn. That was Schaefer.
Right.
You know, Schaefer started in Manhattan. They were at like 15th or 16th Street and 7th Avenue when they first opened in the 1840s. They moved up to Park Avenue and 51st Street.
Amazing.
And they were there for about 50 years before they realized they were sitting on a gold mine and sold the land and moved to Brooklyn, where they
so
set up shop.
So what year was that?
That was 1916, coincidentally 4 years before Prohibition started. Yeah. So they barely had, you know, any time to break in that new facility before the Volstead Act and you know, the crackdown on beer drinking.
Was Schaefer there on Brewer's Row?
Schaefer's... sort of. They were right on the East River.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were, if you kind of drew a straight line down from where they were on about South 8th and South 9th Street,
so
right on the East River. Yeah.
Pretty close to Brooklyn Brewery is now.
Yeah. So, yeah, they weren't actually, they weren't part of that batch, but they were, you know, they were in that area. And you know, they were one of the few that survived Prohibition too. I mean, you have to realize the beer industry was already taking a downturn prior to Prohibition, because what happened is the industry peaked in the 1890s. You know, we had just a huge demand for beer, but with the demand for beer came technology too. Refrigeration, you know, increases in productivity through, you know, machines and you know, bottling lines and things like that. It just made it a lot easier to produce large amounts of beer. So already by about the turn of the 20th century, a lot of the breweries were starting to contract. You know, larger breweries were buying smaller breweries. You know, larger breweries were putting smaller breweries out of business.
They were also just moving to where they could have huge warehouses where everything could be on one gigantic. Where they had more room.
Exactly, and you'll see that especially happen post Prohibition. But even prior to Prohibition, when you know, you had all those larger, you know, smaller breweries, they were starting to set up shop in larger spaces.
Wait, so how did you buy beer? I mean, so is it like now would you get a growler or would you go buy your 750 milliliter bottle of Sriracha Ace? What did beer buying look like in Brooklyn back then?
Well, I mean, there were bottles, but you know, a lot of it was kegged and casked and
so it was bar, you drank it in a bar.
In taverns and things like that. I mean, if you think about it, in terms of just the demand that existed in Brooklyn, you can, it, you know, we think about Prohibition as being this absurd thing. Like, what even possessed them to do that? But when you think that there were 48 breweries in Brooklyn and they were producing...
And fewer people than there are now, I imagine.
Yeah. And they were producing, like, you know, almost, you know, 10 or 15% of the entire nation's beer. Yeah, you stop and think, well, maybe we went a little too far there.
Maybe we had too many breweries.
To me, there's no such thing as too many breweries. But, you know, maybe the temperance movement saw that and said, whoa, wait a minute here. So, for the most part, I mean, it wasn't just the German immigrants. And, like, I've been reading up, in a biography of Theodore Roosevelt, there's a portion where he defends the beer industry, and says that, you know, those, you know, rowdy beer drinkers only account for a small percentage of the population. So why should we punish everyone? Suffer. Exactly.
Oh, we're about to wrap up the pre-prohibition. We haven't even gotten to talk about the hops and how they're grown. Oh. So we're going to have to squeeze that in.
Okay. Well, I can sum it up pretty quickly. I mean, one of the big benefits of brewing in New York was that you had access to massive hop harvests in upstate New York, much of central New York, especially between about Syracuse and Buffalo, made like close to 80% of the country's hops at the time.
And that's what provides bitterness.
Yes.
And
yes.
Flavor and aroma.
Yes. So it was
and beer.
In fact, what they did is they kind of fed both ways, because, you know, you have upstate New York giving hops to the beer industry, and then the city would send people up at the hop harvest, especially singles, and they would mingle and pick up hops. It became a whole social event
too. Are you serious?
I'm completely serious.
We need to start doing that again. I'm serious.
Exactly. No, I would love to pick hops for a few weeks at a time.
Get and hop on.
Meet a that bunch of awesome. People too. So yeah, the thing was, right around the time that Prohibition started, mildew epidemic swept through most of upstate New York, and actually Wisconsin too, which was a huge hop producer at the time, and virtually wiped out their entire crops.
I wonder what the biblical types had to say about that. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about post-prohibition. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to talk about the crash of the... We have to talk about that. All right, we'll be right back. Hey everybody, this is Rachel Wharton. I'm the deputy editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan. This is Brooklyn Eats, and my guest today is Chris O'Leary, who writes the blog BrewNewYorkNewYork.com, and we were talking about this city's brewing history. And we're just about to hit Prohibition. Fascinating topic. Okay, so my question to Chris is, so Prohibition comes along, and in my mind, it's like, okay, the brewery just has to basically turn their open sign around to closed because they're done.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
To some of the more law-abiding ones, yes. Some of them found... other means of producing, you know, other beverages that weren't filled with alcohol. The Volstead Act actually only required that beer be less than 0.5% alcohol by volume. So they could
Is that like an NA kind of beer?
Yeah.
That's basically about what it is?
Yeah. So, I mean, they could produce beer still. They just couldn't produce it with alcohol.
But who was going to buy that?
Yeah, exactly. And some, you know, some breweries made some of their living off of that for a while. Obviously, they just weren't producing nearly as much. And, you know, some people went for more nefarious ways of getting beer to the public. And, you know, that obviously happened too. But for the most part, you know, it virtually wiped out the beer industry. Nationwide, obviously, but especially in Brooklyn, because you still had... over 24 breweries in Brooklyn just before Prohibition, and we came back after Prohibition with just nine.
What, I mean, so those breweries really, they made a living basically selling beer illegally and selling low alcohol beer.
It was mostly selling low alcohol beer or just trying to diversify. You know, it was like, okay, well, we can't make beer anymore, so what else can we make?
Or did they sell the things that people could make beer at home?
Not to my knowledge, but I suppose you could have done that. I mean, that's the crazy thing is that homebrewing was illegal from the start of Prohibition all the way through until 1978. So it was only like 20 years, 30 years ago that we actually legalized that again. So,
but homebrewing?
Yeah.
In any way? I have no idea. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Wait, who fought for that?
Actually, Jimmy Carter.
Really?
Yeah. Billy Carter is his brother and
was
Billy's
home brewer?
Beer. Yeah. That was his doing. That's probably the thing that I appreciate most about Jimmy Carter. You know, aside from
beer?
Peacekeeping and
it seems like it would be way easier to homebrew at home than to grow weed in your closet.
It right? takes a lot less.
There would be like less chance of getting busted.
That's true. Now, you know, people could. You could smell that though. I mean, just
that's true. But who's going around and sniffing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you could just say, "Oh, it's oatmeal. I'm making oatmeal."
Which you are. So who are these nine breweries that made it through?
Well, most of them are names we still know today, but were much bigger or we knew recently. I mean, Schaefer is one of them that survived. Rheingold is another. Peels. That's another one that survived.
Just P-I-E-L.
Yes.
Apostrophe S.
Those were the big ones that really thrived after Prohibition. The industry continued to benefit from the consolidation and the new technologies and things like that. Canning really started, canning started in the New York area. The first brewery to can was in Newark, New Jersey. But it became another way for them to cut down on costs and produce a more consistent product as well.
Where did Schaefer's and Peel's go when they finally left? Schaefer's left in like 1976
was their last year. They were victims of consolidation. What happened essentially was these smaller breweries, and they weren't really small, let's just say that. I mean, Schaefer and Rheingold were still into the early 1960s, early 1970s, were still among the top brewers in the United States. But what ended up happening was the larger brewers bought them up. Folsom was a big one was a big one, that was starting to buy up breweries. Miller did as well.
I don't know the name Falstaff. Do they own anything now?
No, because they were actually purchased by Pabst and then, Pabst was just recently purchased too by another investor, but they still maintain the name. And it's crazy to think that we went from an era of when the post-prohibition peak in the country was close to about 1,000 breweries.
When you say post-prohibition peak, what do you mean?
So the beer industry, in terms of sheer number of breweries, peaked in the 1950s again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during the baby boom era. Yeah, I guess you could tie the two together: baby booms and alcohol.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know. So
they just come back from World War II.
Exactly. Yeah. They want a beer, you know?
Definitely. They tasted them in Germany. The cycle begins again.
So they peaked in the 1950s, and then went from 1,000 to, and keep in mind there were 4,000 at the peak in the 1870s prior to Prohibition. By 7 years after the last brewery left Brooklyn, there were 83 breweries in the entire country.
Have you ever looked up some of the news clippings from the time when Schaefer left?
I haven't. But
it'd be interesting to see what people were saying.
I mean, it was a depressing time, and I think we see that in even some of the things that are still happening today. Not really today, but like just in the last 10 years. I mean, Rolling Rock stopped being produced in Latrobe, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And that town was just shocked, absolutely shell-shocked when that brewery left. And the same with Schaefer and Rheingold. I mean, they were very crucial parts of you know, Brooklyn's life. I mean, Schaefer was a producer, was a sponsor of the Brooklyn Dodgers.
I was just going to ask, were those family names still? Were there like Schaefer's and Rheingold's in like the society pages of the Times?
The Schaefer's, yes. The Rheingold was actually produced by a brewery, and I can't remember the name right now. I probably have it in my notes somewhere.
So like the Schaefer's, are there still Schaefer's in New York City?
I'm sure there are. I don't know how many are affiliated with the brewery.
You've got to track them down.
I know, right? But yeah, they were a part of Brooklyn's identity, and to see them leave was probably really disheartening. And you know, the brand still exists today. But you know,
it has no association with New York City whatsoever.
Exactly,
it's really amazing.
Exactly. So it's sad where it came to.
I mean, it's also really hard to get your head around the fact that there would have been 10 or 11 mansions in Bushwick. I mean,
you know, not necessarily mansions, but ornate homes.
Right. You can still see them, but it's, I mean, like the, but so, I mean, Bushwick was it, I mean, it was both residential and.
Well, it was industrial, but I mean, keep in mind that brewing was happening like almost 24/7. They had to, keep up with demand, keep things up and running. So the brewers needed to be close in case something happened. They needed to be right on site practically.
And so that's so amazing to think about. But they actually had they actually have parties at their breweries the way that brewers do now?
I don't know. I can only dream of that, you know?
Just yes, like, they would, the hop harvest come to Brooklyn.
Right.
You meet your significant other at the William Ulmer annual harvest party.
I know the big party was, as Prohibition ended, there were tons of parties all across the city. And one of the most infamous ones is actually the one where Al Smith, the governor of New York at the time, had the first legal beer in New York State after Prohibition, and it was a Budweiser. And it launched a whole controversy about why wasn't he drinking a New York brewed beer.
Hell yeah.
So that identity existed then and exists today too.
Okay, so when we come back, we're about to take another little break. We're going to talk about post-Prohibition and modern times. Hey, this is Rachel Wharton. I'm the deputy editor of Edible Brooklyn out of Manhattan. This is Brooklyn Eats. And today's topic is beer history in New York City. My guest is Chris O'Leary, who writes BrewYorkNewYork.com. And this last little segment of our show is on post-Prohibition, which, so basically you've got this dead zone. So Schaefer leaves Brooklyn, last brewery to be in New York City in, 1976?
Mm-hmm.
And so we basically have no breweries at all until
1996 was the opening of Brooklyn Brewery.
Oh.
Yep. So we went 20 years without a single brewery in Brooklyn, considering we had 48 exactly 100 years before that.
I feel like it's like some time capsule. I mean, it's almost hard for us now to even, I mean, it seems impossible that this could have been this incredible, like this could be like, this is a Milwaukee where brewing history and brewing culture is so much a part of the fabric of the city, because it just is almost not. We have modern breweries, which we're about to talk about, but that little aspect of Brooklyn is completely gone.
Oh, yeah. And it's if even one of them had stayed in Brooklyn, I think we would have had, I mean, because look what happened in Milwaukee. There's like two breweries in Milwaukee.
And that's still like, it's like basically their motto on their license plate.
Exactly. Like, no exactly. Beer. Like, everyone thinks of beer when they think of Milwaukee.
And we, I mean, and how many breweries were there at their peak, do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know that some people referred to Brooklyn as the Milwaukee of the East Coast.
Really?
So,
that's awesome. Yeah, that's so cool.
I don't know if that's a compliment
that's
necessarily.
Totally a tagline. The Milwaukee of the East Coast. Come visit us. Brooklyn, the Milwaukee of the East Coast. Ding. Wait, so what? So actually, so now we have the craft beer movement in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. We're basically drinking it right this second.
We are.
Where do you know which city in the United States has the most craft breweries?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, and how many does it have?
They have 30. I want what? The last count 32.
Are you serious?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're nowhere near there.
They have the most breweries per capita of any city in the world, wow. Including cities in Germany.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have.
We have three.
Yes. But what about the little Coney Island one?
Okay, I guess you...
Three and a half.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's a nano... I don't even think it's a nano. What's smaller than nano brewery?
I have no idea.
I don't know my bits and bytes.
Mobile?
Thing.
Portable? It's an iPhone app brewery? I don't know. This is something that was on his blog recently.
It's a very tiny brewery. It's basically the setup that I have in my kitchen when I homebrew.
Yeah. Well, that's basically what it is.
But in a storefront.
So, but they're selling it.
Exactly.
So, in some respects, We have like a very, very tiny craft beer scene compared to many, many other cities now.
True.
It's kind of sad.
But I mean, in Brooklyn Brewery, we have an iconic brand.
Right. The 17th largest craft brewery in the country.
Yes.
Not that you can rate a craft beer by its size.
But it's true. I mean, it's really come along. That brand has come a long way. Six Point's been around only 5 years, and they've really established themselves quite well and have really grown out of their space, too. I mean, both Brooklyn and Six Point brew some of their beer outside of Brooklyn because they ran out of space.
Yeah.
They have so much demand. And, you know, the Brooklyn brews some of it up in upstate New York in Utica, and Six Point brews some of it in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
That's really new, though, that's happened.
Yeah, that just happened within the last few months. And in fact, the beer we're drinking right now from Six Point is brewed in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Is it?
Yes, it is. They're Sierra Crisp Pilsner, but it's because it's a lager. And we go back, you know, we come full circle here. It's a lager, and it requires more equipment and more refrigeration, and they didn't have the equipment there to do it.
Oh yeah, we were talking about it before show, because most of the 3.1 breweries in Brooklyn, because that's where they are, because there's right now they're all still in Brooklyn. There isn't one in Manhattan or Queens or the Bronx.
Well, there's a brew pub in Manhattan.
Right.
And there's actually one other that's coming to Manhattan.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, on the roof of Eataly.
Oh, right. With Russian River.
Yeah, Russian River and Dogfish Head and two breweries in Eataly are going to partner. And they're going to have guest brewers from Eataly constantly. Eataly and other places coming to light in craft beer.
Which is so different, I think, than our original brewing history, which is really just like feeding beer to people who you were used to drinking it all day,
exactly.
Every day.
Exactly. And I mean, I think we've come back to the same point that we started at in terms of wanting more flavorful beers. It was more about quality than quantity.
Uh-huh.
Whereas during the height of Brooklyn's brewing history, it was about quantity, not quality. And that was just the times demanded it.
Right.
And now we're at a time where we're looking for more quality beers, and we've come back from the 83 breweries that were in the United States back then, back in the 1980s, to 1600 now. And we've gone from 0 to 3 in Brooklyn.
Yeah. 3.2.
So we've made progress, and I don't people will continue to appreciate the rich brewing history of Brooklyn, I think, but I think we're just going in a different direction now than we did back in the 1840s when we started to establish breweries here.
Well, there is. I mean, I do think more and more New Yorkers, Manhattanites, Brooklynites, wherever, the other three boroughs, they want beer that's made here, which is kind of a nice parallel.
That's another thing. It's like the locavore movement in terms of food has been mirrored in beer too. Mm. People will, you know, I've joked, and I mean this seriously. There are some bad local beers in some parts of the country, and people will prefer to drink those over a mass-produced national brand because it's local. Because they just appreciate that it was made by local hands, it was made by local people, and sometimes even made with local ingredients.
So we have about a half a minute left. And so I have neglected to mention that Craft Beer Week, which is why the whole show began. Craft Beer Week starts tomorrow. It lasts for like 100 million drinking hours. It's about a week 3rd, long. Yeah. But one of the things that I'm most looking forward to for Craft Beer Week, hopefully you're going to be on this tour, is a bike around Brooklyn beer history tour.
Yep.
Yes, you get to drink during the tour. I mean, not the whole time.
Just once.
That would be dangerous. And after, twice.
And after, yeah.
And whatever you want to do before. Or one in the afternoon. But so are you going to be on the it's from Levy's, what is the name of it? Levy's Unique New York is where you can look it up, or on Craft Beer Week's website. You can find all of them, and I bet it's also on your website, which
I did mention it on BrewYorkNewYork.com. If you go to the search and just look for Brooklyn bike, I guess it'll be up there.
And we're under our own power, we will actually see with our own two eyes what's left of many of the things we've talked about. Mm-hmm.
Right on Brewer's Row. Yes. Yeah.
Are you going to go?
I'm going to go. Yes. I am. I'll have my helmet in tow.
Do they make the bike helmet with the two beer? Like,
oh my God, that would be great.
I'm the first person who's ever brought this up.
I had never thought of that. Yeah. I'm sure someone's done it. And if they haven't, they will.
Yes. And on that classy note, this episode of Brooklyn Eats is Brew York, New York. Thank you very much.